right, it's Good Monday. Sports360AZ.com. Back at it another week. Brad Sussmat with you on today's show. Pedro Gomez will join us. I figured let's move Pedro up after what happened with the Dodgers and Mets and Ruben Tejada and Chase Utley. That is one of the big stories. There's a bunch of stuff happening today. A bunch of stuff. And I'll get into the Cardinals doing what they're supposed to do against Detroit. But this story is just overtaking the sports world today. Steve Sarkisian leaving, and the details now are coming out. And it's not pretty. It's really not pretty. We've got to get into that. But we'll go with Pedro at 10:20. Paula Bovin, AZ Central Sports columnist, my friend. She will join us in studio to talk about the weekend that was between ASU, U of A, and the Cardinals. And I got to talk to Paula about Sark, because I think if you're an Arizona State or an Arizona fan, the in-state kids leaving, and that's all they're doing here, the top ones, USC's in trouble now. There's no question about it. So I want to talk to Paula about that and trying to keep kids here. Television show is tonight on Fox Sports Arizona at 6 o'clock, 10 o'clock, and 1 a.m. All right. So the Cardinals weekend, and we'll just get it going there. I didn't think they played their best game. In fact, I heard Bruce Arians afterwards pretty much echo the same sentiment. In the first quarter, the Cardinals were trailing. The Cardinals had turned the ball over a couple of times, and then Detroit just became Detroit. Detroit was not good at all in any way, shape, or form. Look, I'm not going to sit here and downplay a victory. That's just one that you're supposed to win. That's all. It's just another one that you check off the box. And as they progress through their season, you can't go to Detroit and lose a game. And the Lions are just flat awful. Whether they were flat, they couldn't hang on to the football. Abdullah looks like one of the biggest bust picks this year in the NFL. Just can't hang on to the football. That's all there is to it. And look, Matthew Stafford has regressed. He's turned into nothing. That was a team last year that was a playoff team, and this year they just don't even look like themselves. Calvin Johnson was shut down by Patrick Peterson in the Cardinals secondary. They out-hit, they out-willed Detroit. Detroit didn't want to be on the field after halftime. It was very evident. And so they are just moving forward. The Alex Okafor injury, that's the only thing of yesterday's game that I look at. I mean, did Carson Palmer have his greatest game? I don't think he had his greatest game, but he did what he was supposed to do, take care of business. I'm more encouraged as I see this football team play every week that they are running the football with more authority. And yeah, it was against Detroit. But you know what? Detroit on Monday night looked pretty good. They had the wind taken out of their sails, and the Cardinals put their foot on their throat and did what they're supposed to do against a bad team, and that's press down and get them out of here. So a two-game lead in the NFC West at 4-1. They're staying back east for the week. It's a fascinating matchup. This week's going to be all about Bruce Arians returning to Pittsburgh. That's what this is going to be about this week, and how we're not going to see Ben Roethlisberger. We are going to see Michael Vick. And the Steelers play tonight. They play the Chargers tonight, so I have to put up with that since I sleep with a Charger fan every day. And I know what's going to happen in my household tonight. She's going to have her Charger stuff on, and I have to remain objective. The bottom line on this is I watched the Rams and Packers play yesterday, and the Rams put up a pretty good fight. Nick Foles wasn't very good, but the Rams have already beaten the Cardinals once. And so the Cardinals, a 42-17 victory, what are you expecting? You know, the story was going to be if they lost the game. The expectation level has risen to a point where a game in October that you win, and they've been blowing teams out. Are they pretenders or are they contenders? I think that's a very fair question to ask now. Because if you look at the Cardinals and the teams that they've blown out, those teams aren't good. And the team that they ended up beating at the end, I thought they controlled the fourth quarter against the New Orleans Saints. So, and I've said at the time, I felt they were catching the Bears at a good time. The Bears had a nice win yesterday, but the Bears still aren't any good. And so it's just stacking victories in the next one up, the next team in front of you. When they play Baltimore in a couple weeks, I don't know about you, I had to sit through CBS not switching to the Cowboys-Patriots game because they wanted to show the Browns and the Ravens. And I'm sitting there hearing Kevin Harlan, and we love Kevin Harlan here on the show. And I love Rich Gannon, but even they sounded like, boy, we're at a bad football game. What are you doing here? So it's fine. Am I downplaying this too much, Eric?
No, I didn't really. I was out of town. I didn't see a lot of the Cardinal game.
You didn't miss.
I just saw the highlights. And when I got off the plane, all I saw was, oh, Drew Stanton is warming up, and it's like not even really that late in the game.
So where were you this weekend?
I was in Omaha, Nebraska.
Why Omaha, Nebraska?
I went to the Wisconsin-Nebraska game on Saturday.
Why would you go to Wisconsin against Nebraska?
Have some good friends back there, so go back every year for a game. Took the wife for the first time. She really enjoyed it.
And TCU played at Kansas State.
That's correct.
So you were within range of doing the double.
2.5 hours, but the schedules would not jive.
What are you talking about? A TCU game is 5 hours long nowadays.
That's true.
You could have made it by halftime.
By the time we left the stadium and ran to the nearest sports bar, the TCU game was just starting. So
let me think. Nebraska, who was it?
They played Wisconsin.
Nebraska, Wisconsin.
Really good game between two very average Big Ten teams.
And that's the Big Ten, though.
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah.
Good weekend, though. Good weekend.
The Sark story, does this surprise you?
It saddens me. It doesn't surprise me. It just saddens me. It's a situation, Brad, where, and I sent you the story earlier today. I mean, if this was going on back at Washington, and now that all the bar tabs and all the legal paperwork has come out, I mean, there was a party, and on his tab, he ordered like 106 tequila shots for 16 people. Think about that.
It was 91 shots of tequila at a cost of $1,023 at a restaurant in Indian Wells, California.
Why did this take so long to come to the surface?
With at least 16 people at the party. Because when you have a problem, okay, when you have an addiction, you don't want to say that you have an addiction. And you're also in the world of football, where football is viewed as a chismo sport. You are the man. You are the alpha male. You are the guy. You're running the show. Look at me. I'm big, bad Steve Sarkisian, and I'm at USC, and I can do whatever I want. You want some shots? Hey, man, big cigars? Let's have some shots. I'm throwing shots back with Sark. I'm big time.
Shouldn't Pat Hayden been more in step with his head coach? I mean, when this happened back in late August, the incident at the USC function, shouldn't that have been the clear sign of, you know what, you just need to go to rehab right now. Don't even worry about the season. Now they're halfway through the season and everything's, like I said, bubbling up to the surface. I think he deserves some of the blame too.
Oh, there's no question. I think in this case, if you look at USC, okay, let's look at Arizona State. When Dennis Erickson is here at the end and Vontaze was running crazy and nobody wanted to do anything about it. And we're over here waving our arms back and forth saying, you guys, your program is a train wreck and it was a disaster. And it was.
And I'm not sure if you saw Thursday night. I know you're out of town. But that a home loss to Washington where you just can't produce anything offensively is about as bad as and as embarrassing on the field for USC as you can get.
But let me go back on this. When you let a program just kind of sit there out of control where ASU was, I mean, Lisa Love didn't know. Lisa Love had no idea what was going on. The program was just a rudderless ship. It was an unmitigated joke, a disaster. When they went up to Vegas and they sat there on the bus and said, we don't have to go through a walkthrough. And there's pictures of guys on the corners in Vegas, ASU players, and they're, you know, sitting there with their shots and they're doing their signs on Twitter, and everybody thinks it's really cool. No, it's not cool at all. It's a program that's completely out of control. So then let's go over to USC. And they got Dennis out of there, and they got Lisa out of there, and Steve came in, and Todd brought a form of discipline.
No question.
And people think that Todd, now there's some that feel like Todd doesn't have as many friends as he should, because I think he's taken some of that element and kind of pushed it to the side and said, this is how I run my show. Okay. That's ASU. Now you look over at USC where they hired Lane Kiffin, who was just a disaster, just an absolute disaster. And then they use the excuse of, well, we were a program that was hit hard by the NCAA and we haven't had full scholarships in order to go out and do our thing. And Lane gets blown out and they bring in Sark. And Sark, from the minute he was brought on board, I sensed, not just here in Arizona, but even throughout the Pac-12, there was a sense of, whew, good thing they hired him because they're still not going to get back on top, right? And now you look at it, if you're Pat Hayden, Pat Hayden should be gone. Pat Hayden should be gone. Because if you look at the major, and look, I covered Pat Hayden when he was with the Rams. That doesn't mean, and I thought he did a good job on Notre Dame football. Doesn't mean he's any good as an athletic director. You look at the basketball program over there, it's still a disaster. You look at the football program over there, and now you've got this mess. And at some point, you have to go to these old cigar USC guys that are big, deep pockets and say, you know what? We're nothing. Our program is viewed as a joke. We were a top five team before the season started, and our coach is in rehab and embarrassed us publicly, and you still let him sit there. Now we're losing at home to teams like Washington, who have no business on national television doing what they do. We're not getting the kids that we once were able to get, and now there's not a chance. If you look at this year's recruiting class, unless they blow him out and start completely from scratch, there's not a chance that they're going to be able to go into some living rooms and not have negative recruiters from other programs say, so this is the guy that you want your son to play for. This is the guy. When these stories come out, you know, the one Eric talked about, this was at Indian Wells. Then they had another expense report that had $1,600 at a resort hotel pool bar in 2013.
Just on alcohol.
One-day recruiting trips for more than $100. The report indicates that Sark was a regular at multiple bars around Seattle during his 5 years at Washington. A former player telling the LA Times that the coach drank 8 to 10 shots on a weekly basis at one bar in particular. So this is the head coach at US stinking C. And now you have this mess. And, you know, I'm going to turn this around. If you're Todd Graham today, if you're Rich Rodriguez today, you look at every kid that's made a verbal to USC in recruiting, and you're on the phone to those kids. And if you're Jim Mora, you're on the phone to those kids. And if you're David Shaw, and if you're Kevin Sumlin, who was here in the Valley the other night, on Friday night, Kevin Sumlin was here recruiting. This is a bombshell for a program that has already been hit by the NCAA. And you've got to come in with a really wide broom. Not my program, not my problem. Feel bad for anybody that's got to struggle with that, but gosh almighty. The Coyotes are 2-0. How about that? They play at Anaheim tomorrow. I never thought that'd roll off my lips. Coyotes 2-0. And they beat the Kings and the Penguins.
Not bad.
The Suns are home to Houston tomorrow night, preseason play. But on the other side, Pedro Gomez is going to join us. Because the other big story over the weekend, along with Sark, was Chase Utley's slide into second base. And was it a clean play? Was it a dirty play? What does Pedro think? And what does he believe is going to happen? That's next. I'm Brad Sussmat. All right, Pedro Gomez joins us now. Every week we talk baseball with Pedro. Usually we do it on Wednesdays, but given what happened over the weekend, I don't know, I might have you on every hour, because what a fascinating postseason. You're in Chicago, where the Cubs got Arrieta on the mound. Are they in control in this series over the Cardinals, Pedro?
Boy, if Jake Arrieta's on the mound, you'd have to think so.
Yeah.
The other thing that they're really excited about is Anthony Rizzo and Chris Bryant are a combined 0-for-21 in the postseason so far. And their thinking is there is absolutely no way that's going to remain that way. So you get Arrieta, you get those two guys who they think are ready to unleash. You get Wrigley Field involved. And already, you know, I've been at Wrigley since 9:30, three hours now. And this morning, you can already see at noon here that the electricity, the excitement all around Wrigley, Brad, it's ramping up.
Well, that's cool. And you know, I've watched the series, and I'm looking at Kyle Schwarber and Dexter Fowler, you know, getting stuff done. And as you said, not Bryant, not Rizzo. So who would have thought that? And Joe Maddon, if you're starting a franchise today, Pedro, is he your guy to tab as the manager?
I mean, I'm still a Bruce Bochy guy.
All right.
But Joe Maddon is definitely, if Bochy's not available, I think I am going Maddon, because he works so well with young players. He did it in Tampa, you know, in his second or third year, took them to the World Series after they were bottom feeders their entire existence. And now he's gotten to Chicago, and in year one, a franchise that has not had a winning record in years, and they're on, you know, they're a handful of games away from being in the World Series. So you'd have to say that there is some mad genius, so to speak, to Joe Maddon's game, and it certainly works.
And Jake Arrieta, none better. And what is it about him that strikes you?
I think more than anything, the change in his mechanics, when you look at him in Baltimore a few years ago and you look at him now, he is completely different. There were a lot of moving parts when he was in Baltimore. And here when he got to Chicago, pitching coach Chris Bosio, a couple of the minor league instructors just got with him and said, we need to tighten you up. We need to have less moving parts. And all of a sudden, the command is just spectacular, spectacular. Mm-hmm. So it goes to show that good coaching still does matter to a degree, especially with pitching.
Pedro Gomez joining us. He is at Wrigley Field this afternoon. It will be the Cubs and the Cardinals doing battle. I would have to think that the Major League Baseball powers that be are doing backflips. I've seen the ratings from over the weekend, and for the most part, they're really good. And when you have a play like the Utley play the other night with the Dodgers and Mets, it only amplifies the number. You've seen the play over and over and over. Where do you come down on whether it was a dirty play by Chase Utley or not?
Look, I know it's an aggressive play, but yeah, there is some dirtiness to it because he didn't slide until after the bag. And I know that it is technically a legal play, but a legal play doesn't mean you can't be suspended. You know, and I was on Twitter last night showing this 1996 Albert Bell forearm shiver to Fernando Vina as he was running from first to second. Vina was the Brewers' second baseman at the time, went to tag him, and Bell just laid him out. Now, technically, that was legal, but Major League Baseball still suspended him for 5 games. You know, when you hit a batter, it is legal to hit a batter, but yet pitchers are routinely suspended if the intent was to harm the other player. So, you know, for all the Dodger fans that are saying, no, this was a legal play, or people thinking old school baseball. No, this is old school baseball. Yeah, to a degree, it is old school baseball. But we've seen all sports evolve. You know, you can no longer in the NFL hit a defenseless player.
Right.
So sports evolve, Brad. They evolve, and it's for the betterment and the health protection of all players. So it's no surprise at all that Utley was suspended for 2 games.
Okay, but there's a lot of layers to this story. I was watching it, and there was the confusion of Chase Utley not touching the base. There was, even today, why he is going to be allowed to play tonight with the appeal process. Why do they have to take their time through this? Sort through all of the side stories that jump out at you over this play.
Yeah, it's a little surprising that they couldn't hear the appeal today. Because they are in New York. That is where all the Major League offices are.
Right.
The Major League executives can certainly come to Citi Field. It doesn't have to be at Park Avenue at the Major League offices, the appeal to be heard, although that could have happened also because all the teams stay right in Manhattan, right? It's not far to those offices where Major League Baseball is. A little surprised that the appeal could not be heard today, which means Utley will be playing tonight. I would expect her to be, Brad, I would expect there to be considerably more security around the Dodgers today because, and that includes the hotel they're at, that includes when they get to Citi Field, when they, you know, everywhere. You know, in terms of baseball-wise, here's the thing that really surprises me. Utley is a second baseman. Second basemen are the most exposed players on the field. Because when you do go to turn two, your back normally is to the runner coming from first to second. And, you know, this is somebody that knows. Now, he does play a very aggressive style and always has. And I'm not saying that, you know, there's been talk about, what, do we wrap them in bubbles? Hey, look, we heard that about quarterbacks years ago when they started instituting rules to protect the quarterbacks more. Oh, are they going to wear skirts now?
Yeah.
You know, we've heard all of that. But the reality is that players are bigger than ever. They're faster than ever. And why expose them to injuries that are not necessary? Look, injuries happen no matter what. But it doesn't mean you have to say, it's okay, let's just let the rules be what they are and let these guys hammer it out on their own. It doesn't have to be that way. So,
let me jump in on you on this one, though, Pedro. If you're putting yourself in Chase Utley's mind, okay, he's not thinking, I'm going to do something dirty here Or are you suggesting are you suggesting that he is a very aggressive player? So this may be for him right on the border. He's just trying to take out the player. I'm not defending him, but I don't think as he's running to second, it's I'm going to do something really dirty in this split second. I can't imagine that happening.
Well, I don't think when a pitcher intentionally throws at a hitter, he's thinking, I'm going to break his wrist either. But that is a possible consequence that happens if a ball gets in on a player's hand. So of course I don't think Chase Utley is running to second thinking, I'm going to mess him up.
Yeah.
I'm going to bowl over. But when you see where the slide was, he did not slide into the bag. He slid after the bag, and he threw his body into Ruben Tejada's body. So, you know, people have been talking about Chris Coughlin's slide into Jung Ho Gong in the Cubs-Pirates game a few weeks ago. Well, Coughlin was sliding. He was physically sliding before the bag. In this case, Utley was not sliding before the bag. He threw his body into Tejada's body after the bag. So there was absolutely no intent to do what you're supposed to try to do there, which is to reach second base. Yes, people have been breaking up double plays forever.
Forever, sure.
But the reality is, forever.
Sure.
But the reality is, you know, the horse collar tackle was part of the NFL until it was outlawed because of the potential injury. So, you know, in terms of the suspension, I don't see anything wrong with it. I don't see anything wrong with suspending a player
for the series,
trying to do what he was supposed to be doing there.
Okay, but is it a game? Is it at the series? Is that what MLB is struggling with? How long of a suspension do you throw Chase Utley out for?
Well, they said two games, and obviously I think the initial thought was that way he doesn't play at Citi Field at all.
Yeah.
Because there's only two games at Citi Field that the Dodgers could possibly play this year. And, you know, Chase Utley's a free agent. Who knows if he'll ever play again? We don't know that he's going to play next season.
Does Mattingly play him tonight? Does Mattingly play him tonight?
I think so. His numbers are good.
Yeah.
His numbers are good. He probably does play. He probably does.
And what do the Mets do when he comes to the plate? What do the Mets do? Is it just a matter of what the game situation is? Or would you expect retaliation tonight?
And that's going to be the most interesting thing, because if the umpires do pregame warnings,
which they should, I think,
then should Matt Harvey hit him? Well, Matt Harvey's got to be ejected from the game at that point.
Mm-hmm.
But if Major League Baseball decides we're not going to issue warnings, because if we do, it's going to take a little bit of the policing out of the game, the self-policing out of the game, well, then Harvey has a green light to retaliate. Which, by the way, is as old as trying to break up double plays.
Yep.
So, I mean, for people that say that's barbaric, that is also part of the game.
No, I mean, tonight is really
If you're going to accept the breaking up of the double play, then you're going to have to accept the retaliation portion as well.
Okay. I know that players reach out to you. You reach out to players. You're very plugged in. What has the reaction been around Major League Baseball outside of the Dodgers clubhouse or even the Mets clubhouse about this?
It's split. It's definitely split. Joe Maddon sees no problem with it. He's old school.
Mm-hmm.
He says, hey, that's an aggressive play by an aggressive player. And yet there are other players that are saying, no, you can't have that. You can't have somebody intentionally throw their body at someone because of the possibility of what could happen, especially somebody whose back was turned. You know, if you see it coming at you, you can brace yourself. You can prepare for the hit. But his back was completely turned. So it's split. Older players are fine with it. Younger players, not so much. It's a bizarre situation, especially because, hey, we already know. Listen, when the postseason comes around, everything is magnified.
Right.
That is as old as, you know, the games have been being played. So, yes, you are going to see magnification, because people are pulling out all sorts of videos from the regular season. Hey, look at this slide. This was no different. True, but it is magnified in the postseason. That's the reality. And that's why we're having this discussion. That's why Major League Baseball decided to suspend Chase Utley. That's why, because it is magnified.
And it's Dodgers-Mets, which I think just adds on to it. So for those of us that have seen the game, for anything New York, it could be Yankees-Dodgers or Mets-Dodgers, not as much, but it's still New York against Los Angeles and something controversial happens. So it just adds
to it. Well, yeah, but in this case, it could have been Astros and Royals. But if it's the same play and somebody breaks their legs, it's going to be magnified because it's the playoffs.
But I don't think it'd be magnified times 100 times. I mean, you may be right, but
you've got the two largest media markets in the country. So, of course, in that sense, you've got more newspapers writing about it. You've got more commentary about it because you've got larger cities involved. So, yes.
All right. Enjoy your time in Chicago. Stay well. Thanks for the visit.
By the way, the wind looks like it's picking up.
Oh, boy.
And it's blowing out, and it's blowing out to right field.
Oh,
so
boy.
Just something to be aware of watch this game this afternoon.
All right. Have some fun. See ya. There's Pedro Gomez right there on the spot in Chicago at Wrigley Field. Eric, did you see this? I know you're in Nebraska, so they probably don't even have TVs there. They're on pack mules. So
it's not true. Yes, I did see it. Because when you're in the Midwest, things happen 2 hours later. So right before bed, both Friday and Saturday, I was watching Dodgers-Mets because it didn't start until like 9 o'clock.
It's compelling.
It is compelling.
It's really compelling.
At first, I thought, wow, the Dodgers are going to score like 3 runs the entire series. And then finally, Saturday late, the bat's awoken, and now we have this Chase Utley situation.
See, I agree with Pedro. Like, if he's out warming up tonight, that's going to be ugly. And it just takes one idiot. And there's a lot of idiots that go to sporting events. Mm-hmm. Lots and lots and lots of them. And metal detectors can only do so much. And it's Dodgers-Mets. I'm going to be watching tonight. And I'll watch I've got this thing where I'm sleeping with this woman who's a Charger fan. And I've been married to her for 27 years. So I got to put up with that nonsense. She'll have her Rivers jersey on. But I'll be fighting with her tonight. I want to see the baseball game.
They're so compelling. I've watched a lot of baseball since the playoffs started just because it's fall baseball. And all the series have been good. There have been great storylines. I mean, Cardinals, Cubs, Midwest, lots of history in that series too. And oh, by the way, A.J. Hinch is like a game away from getting in the next round of the playoffs.
You look at A.J. Hinch and you say maybe Josh Burns and maybe that group.
Maybe.
They were just a little ahead of their time.
Maybe. Diamondbacks got it right, though. It took a while, but they got it right.
All right. Paula Bovin on the other side. News and notes. In studio with Paula Bovin. That's next. I'm Brad Sussmat. You know, there comes a point on the Sarkisian story where there's a lot of piling on this morning. I'm having stories sent to me. The house that he had to, he lost his house. And he's going through a divorce, sold his home. The home has multiple wet bars, wine cellar, and 18 TVs among features at Sark's former residence. The fact that it's the number of bars within the house and the wine cellar, I don't know. Matt Leinart reached out today and said, Sarkisian is my friend. He needs help. That's actually the right thing to say. If you want me to just sit here and poke fun at somebody's misfortune in dealing with alcohol, you've come to the wrong place. I do think it's very fair to point out when there are tabs now that have come out today in the Los Angeles Times that point out that he ordered 91 shots. That is fair contextually to show you the what's going on here with him. And the fact that Pat Hayden tried and walked away from suspending him or even letting him go, it seems to me that there's stuff now being leaked out that is almost on the USC side saying, we got to figure a way to get him out of here because if he's dealing with alcoholism, is that something that is covered?
And oh, by the way, if it can't get any worse for USC, it actually can. Tomorrow, ESPN is running a 30 for 30 on the rise and fall of USC football with all the Reggie Bush scandals and allegations and
another one coming?
Pete Carroll tiptoeing out the door just before the storm hit in L.A.
And the fortune, again, for Arizona State and Arizona, I'm looking at things here within the state, is that USC just cannot get out of their own way.
But they already played. I mean, they already played.
No, they played. And the fact that The reports that came out last night that Sark was drunk on the sidelines at the ASU game.
It's unfathomable to think about that, but really is it, now that we know all the details of what you went over early in the show with all these bar tabs and all the bars in his house and all the alcohol abuse that he'd been doing, dating all the way back to his time at Washington? It's not surprising. It's a night game at ASU. Who knows what he was doing Saturday?
But how is it when you're hiring somebody? If you're Pat Hayden and you're going out after Steve Sarkisian, how is it that you let something like his personal life go completely unflushed?
At only one of the most visible football positions in
exactly all
of college athletics. USC football has to be ranked up in the top five, I'd say.
And you're sitting here right now looking at USC saying, okay, that program, their recruiting class is likely going to get wiped out unless they bring in Chip Kelly. If Chip Kelly leaves the Eagles, that's one hot name out there. And I don't know why Chip Kelly would leave yet. If Kevin Sumlin were to finally decide to leave Texas A&M, you know, if your guy at TCU decided to get out of there, Gary Patterson, it is USC.
It'd be a bad fit. He'd never leave.
Probably would. He's like Bill Snyder, right?
I mean, yeah, he wouldn't leave. I mean, he's
are
not
you saying that
leave.
As a fan?
No, I'm saying that because I just know he's not going to leave. I just know he's not going to leave. They finished second in the country last year. He recruits in Dallas-Fort Worth. They're a visible program at a private school with a brand new stadium. Why would he leave?
Sure. But are there those that, you know, I heard Jack Del Rio's name for a while. And you know, go bring back this former player and that former player. But you look at USC, when Mike Garrett was the athletic director there, they were a disaster. They won in football, but their basketball program was a disaster.
And it has been for a while.
It's been a – and – so while you're here at ASU and you're Todd Graham and you're trying to get these kids out of Southern California, and Todd's done a good job of that. Todd has done a very good job of that. This will sound really cruel, but this is where you have to pounce. It's mid-October. This is the time where visits are happening. Byron Murphy, top recruit here in the state from Saguaro, USC assistant, was at his game Friday night. At his game. So was Kevin Sumlin. Kevin Sumlin was here in Scottsdale Friday night watching this kid play.
And he's had some decent success plucking kids out of Scottsdale recently. So
sure,
just saying.
But it's the backstory of this, and also that it's ASU and U of A's chief battler in Southern California. I would say that USC has more to offer than UCLA in terms of history, tradition, and heritage. Bruins fans will disagree with me on that, but it's just a fact. UCLA's been a basketball school more than a football school until recently. And more details are going to come out on this. So,
and oh, by the way, during Paul's interview, it came out, side note, Will Grier, the freshman quarterback at Florida, suspended for the season at least due to NCAA violations.
Wow.
And they play LSU on Saturday. So.
And McElwain had done a very good job.
Very good job.
If you're talking about coach of the year candidates,
uh-huh.
McElwain would have to be at the top of the list.
Just college football is just crazy. Just so much. Just,
no, I'm just processing that.
No, there's just always something. Every day, something happens in college football, and not on a Saturday.
You know my stance on Rich Rod. That if LSU had a bad season and Les Miles were blown out, Rich is all over that job.
Well
Les Miles has not had a bad season because he has a Heisman Trophy running back.
Correct.
Steve, if Steve Spurrier gets let go or retires at South Carolina, something's going to happen at South Carolina.
He will retire. They will probably ask him to retire. It'd be really classless of them to fire him for all he's done for that school.
And now you look at Georgia losing to Tennessee over the weekend, and that there's not been a change at Georgia in a long time.
And Nick Chubb injured, that's not
good for a good combination.
Nope.
I'm looking at Rich. And Rich has got a home outside of Atlanta. There's going to be jobs. Now that this USC situation, there's no way Sark comes back. You know, this morning it's Kyle Whittingham to USC. There's going to be the Chip Kelly to USC all over the place. And oh, by the way, it just happens to be a huge week for ASU playing at Utah this coming Saturday night. Jordan Hamm will be there for us, by the way. Fired up today. A lot going on. We're going to get back over to the Cardinals after this timeout. Sports360AZ.com. AZ Central Sports. I'm Brad Sussmat. So the Cardinals are in West Virginia for the next 5-6 days, and then they have the Steelers on Sunday. I think it's very fair to be asking the question, are they contenders or are they pretenders? because so far they've played four teams that really aren't very good, and they played a very good Rams team and ended up losing. And it's not that I'm sitting here going to badmouth a team that ended up beating the Lions yesterday, but the Lions are not the Lions. The Lions are the kitty cats. They're just not any good. 42-17, and they took the foot off the gas after a while. There's a few things, though, that I like. I like the fact that Chris Johnson, Steve Keim has proven again that he can go find guys off the scrap heap and end up turning them around and making them productive NFL players. Frosty Rucker is one of those guys a couple of years ago. He's done a nice job, I think, on the defensive front. You look at this season and the job that Chris Johnson has done. And for me, it's when do you sit down with Chris Johnson and his representatives and say, you know what, we want to have you here longer than just this season. I like the line that they had in the broadcast yesterday that Arians referred to Carson Palmer, Chris Johnson, Larry Fitzgerald as the fine wine guys. I do like that. Guys that have been around and they're like fine wine. They only get better with age. I didn't think Carson had his best game yesterday. I thought he was very good. I just didn't think it was his best. There were a couple throws he could have made. I'm one of these guys that, as we sit here in October, how it looks in October versus how it looks in January, that's all that matters to me. You know, the schedule down the stretch, and Peter King and I talked about this last week. Peter joins us every week, a couple weeks ago, actually. Peter pointed out that, you know, while they have the Packers late in the season, if you look at the division and how the NFC North is playing out, Green Bay may have a 3 or 4 game lead. And when the Cardinals play the Packers, is there going to be any incentive to sit there and have Aaron Rodgers on the field? Now, yeah, there's a lot of season left to go. But watching the Packers yesterday and watching Rodgers basically dismantle, and I think probably the bigger story in that game, because I watched most of that game, was the Green Bay defense getting after Nick Foles and making him look silly. There were some plays that Detroit could have made yesterday. You know, the Matthew Stafford first interception was just a horribly thrown ball. Tried to throw it over Rashad Johnson, didn't get it over him. The ball that was tipped up in the air by Corey Redding in return was just a terrific play. But again, Stafford laid it out there. The fumble by Abdullah, the fumble by Tate, you know, I can just go through each one of these and say, yeah, the Cardinals were opportunistic in recovering them or making plays. That's what good teams do. But I don't know if the Cardinals are a great team as of yet. I don't know that. Because the one team that they've played that I think is any good, they ended up losing to, and they lost to them at home. So rather than get all sky high here on a Monday, I call it overreaction Monday. You can't overreact on a negative end and a positive end. You can say, oh, this is great, this is great. Yeah, it's nice that they came back, but let's be honest. Anybody who's going to sit here and say Detroit had a better team top to bottom than the Cardinals, are you kidding me? And so I like seeing Bruce Arians get upset and get fired up and get angry at players when they weren't able to capitalize on third down and ones and they have to punt the ball away, because you're going to need to make that third down and one when you're playing games in late December and January. You're just going to need to. So, you know, it's fine that they won. It's fine that they play Pittsburgh this week without Ben Roethlisberger. I think it's, again, a fortunate move that they end up not having to face Roethlisberger, who's down with an injury. Forsett went down with an injury for the Ravens yesterday. They've got Baltimore here in a couple of weeks. Are they going to get lucky on that front too? Luck is a big part of it. In stacking wins against teams that you should beat, they should beat the Steelers this week. They should beat the Ravens. The Ravens do not have Terrell Suggs. Their defense is not what it once was. So, and we'll talk much more about it through the week. TV show is tonight at 6, 10, and 1, 6 p.m., 10 p.m., and 1 a.m. on Fox Sports Arizona. Brad Sussmat, Football AZ. Tonight on the TV show, Paula Bovin. Mike Bercovici is going to join us tonight. And we'll have Jason Mons, the head football coach over at Saguaro. So I'm tying in the pro, the college, and high school around the state on a football basis 3 times a week on Fox Sports Arizona. It's pretty cool. Eric Sorensen's our producer. I'm Brad Sussmat. Thanks for being with us. Jared Nielsen, of course, is our chairman of the board on a busy Monday.